Hey, just before I get started, I know we have a number of people who are real prayer warriors here. Tomorrow morning, I leave for Winnipeg, 2 hours actually just, I don't even know which direction, 2 hours away from Winnipeg. I'm doing a family camp this week, Manhattan Beach Camp, and if you would just be praying for me, praying that the Holy Spirit would work in each of the evening services there all week long, and just believing that God's going to do some great things. So I sure would appreciate your prayers this week. Thank you so much. There was a president of a bank. He had just been given the reins of the bank, and he was pretty confident he could do the job, but yet there was some apprehension in his heart as to whether or not he could be as successful as the previous bank president, because that president had done incredible work. So he decided that what he would do is that he would sit down with this former president, his predecessor, and he would just pick his brain about what he could do to be a great president, how he could be successful. So they meet for dinner, they're sitting down, and the new president turns to his predecessor and says, "Hey, I just need to ask you this question. How can I be successful at this job?" His predecessor sits there, thinks for a moment, and says, "That's easy. I can answer that in two words. Good choices." The president was a little perplexed. He was thinking there'd be a little bit more. And he's like, okay. So he writes it down, good choices. He says, "Can I ask you a question? How can I make good choices as the bank president?" The predecessor pauses, closes his eyes, thinks, smiles, says, "That's easy. I can answer that in one word. Experience." President thought, that's actually pretty profound for as simple as it is. He says, "Well, let me ask you just one more question. How do I get experience to make good choices?" His predecessor closes his eyes, smiles, opens his eyes, says, "That's easy. I can answer that in two words. Bad choices." Bad choices. This predecessor had learned in all his mistakes and all his failings, in all those bad moments along the journey, how to grow, how to get experience to make good choices. Sometimes in life we think that everything has got to be perfect in order for us to flourish and be happy. We think that we've got to have X number of dollars, X size of house, we've got to have so many cars of a certain brand, we've got to have this type of clothes, we've got to have this level of recognition, we've got to have X number of friends on Facebook or Twitter or whatever. We've got to have a certain level of something in order for us to be happy, in order for us to flourish, in order for us to truly get the most out of life. But I want to propose to you this morning, as we dive into the Sermon on the Mount, I want to propose that sometimes the greatest flourishing, happy moments are not in the high points, not in the places where we have the most, but in the lowest points. In fact, this is what Jesus said to a crowd. Jesus has been preaching, he's been not preaching yet, but he's been performing miracles throughout the land, and he's going from town to town performing miracle after miracle, and the crowds start to follow Jesus, and he finds himself at this one place by the Sea of Galilee in this rolly green patch of land, and he begins to deliver what's called the Sermon on the Mount. And as he's looking out at this crowd of individuals who really are the riffraff of society, and I mean that with the utmost respect, but they really are those individuals who would have very little physically, financially, very low social status. They would be under the oppression of Rome. This group of individuals who wouldn't have much, who wouldn't be in high places, who wouldn't be in the places you'd think that they would be successful. These individuals are before him. And Jesus, who they believe could be the Messiah because of the miracles he's performing, he begins to unfold the Sermon on the Mount, and he gives these nine blessing statements. Blessed are, blessed are, blessed are. These nine statements, and the first three speaks to a reverse of what we think brings us happiness. A reversal of what we think is success. A reversal, a paradigm shift of what the people expected. And so if you look up at the screen, I want to look at Matthew chapter 5, verses 3 to 5, to look at the first three blessed statements of what Jesus shared with this crowd. He said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth." These three statements, blessed are. These three statements are three statements about low places that we find ourselves in life. Every statement, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who grieve or mourn. Blessed are the meek. As Jesus looked around the crowd, I could just see the heads nodding. Yep, that's me. I mean, the first one for sure, the poor in spirit. I mean, this crowd was full of the poor. Yep, that's me. This group that he looked out upon, they were individuals who could relate to these three blessed statements. And Jesus speaks to them and he says, hey, I want you to know that you are blessed when you are in these low situations. Now, this word blessed, I've done tons of reading this week about it. The word is so key to our understanding of Matthew chapter 5 and the first nine blessed statements. Some people think that it means that, man, God's favor is upon you, because that's one of the meanings. Another thought that comes along with it is that it means to be happy. But after doing some extensive reading this week, what I found one author said is that the most accurate translation of this word blessed means to flourish in happiness. And I won't spend a lot of time on this, but if you compare the word that's used here with the Septuagint, which is the Greek version of the Old Testament, you'll see that every time in the Old Testament where this word about flourishing in happiness is used, it completely ties into these nine statements. And so what Jesus is saying is that when you are in the circumstances, these nine circumstances, it's the place that you can flourish in happiness. In these low places, these first three, these very lowly places where we think, man, we just need to get out of this. We just need the Messiah to come. We just need him to bring justice. If he would come and bring us all the good stuff, then we can grow. Then we can be successful. Then we can be happy. Jesus says, no. Listen to me for a second. He says, if you are in these low places, that's the place. Those are the places where you will flourish in happiness. And I want to show you the three principles that he teaches us. The very first is this. Down is the path upward. Down is the path upward. Jesus says to them, blessed are the poor, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Most likely, Jesus is referring, when he speaks to the poor in spirit, he is most likely thinking about a group from the Old Testament called the Anoin. The Anoin. The Anoin were a group of individuals who were very, very poor. They were marginalized. They were economically poor. They were of the lowest status. They were constantly moving around, just trying to barely survive, completely dependent upon God. This word Anoin means in the Hebrew to bow down, to be bowed down. It's the very lowest place. Their very name speaks of the low place they're at. And they are so poor in spirit. In every phrase and every idea of the word poor in spirit, that they just completely trust upon God, and they're waiting for the Messiah to come. They're waiting for the Messiah to come. And Jesus says, hey, blessed are you who are like the Anoin, the poor in spirit, for yours is the kingdom of God. You see, Jesus was trying to teach that when we're poor in spirit, we will have the best chance of being part of God's kingdom. That to be down is the path upward. To be down, to be low, it's the path upward. What do I mean? You see, God isn't looking for people who approach him like they can do God a favor. God's not looking for a group, oh, you know what? It would be really great if we could get people who have their act together, because that's the kingdom of heaven. It'd be really good if we could just find people who've got all the money, because that's what the kingdom of... God, look, I've got all this money. Oh, you're doing me a favor by following me. Oh, God, look at all the skills I have. Oh, thank you so much for following me. Look at all that you have. You're helping me out. God, look, I'm at the top of the ladder. People know me. Oh, thank heavens. Now we can get the kingdom message out. It's so good to have you. God's not looking for people who've got their act together, who do him a favor. What he's looking for are those who are low, who can rise up. Let me explain. Pastor Nick, would you come here for a second? Got some rope. There's so many things I want to do with this rope. I, No, I want you to hold on to this. And I know I need you to really use your imaginative skills right now. Just enter into a creative mindset, imagination that Nick is God, okay? I know that's really difficult, but I want you to just pretend that. When I first start to sense the call of God on my life, I was in a place where I was really close to God. And he started to speak to me. I had been pursuing him. Someone had challenged me. I've shared this story before. Someone had challenged me about my faith. That they didn't think I was a Christian because of the lack of passion I was showing in some areas of my Christian walk. And so I wanted to prove them wrong. And in those moments, I started getting really close to God. So now we're pretty close. And not that close. Super close. God starts to speak to me, and he says, I want you to be my servant. I want you to go into ministry. I felt that call in my life. Except I felt like the poor in spirit. God, I don't really have a lot to offer you. You won't believe this, but I was pretty shy. I didn't like big crowds. I just, until people got to know me, my one or two friends, and I would hang out with them and that, but I was pretty shy. God, you can't use me. I'm just a shy kid. I'd say, God, I'm poor in spirit. I don't even have money. I mean, we were so poor, the robbers didn't even come near our place. I mean, we were poor. I've told you this before. We barely had anything. Apple sandwiches at the end of the month, super poor. I didn't know anybody. I came from a broken home. I lived in a single parent family. And so we weren't the popular people at church. We weren't the ones getting invited to the best gatherings with the church people. If there was anybody who was poor in spirit, it was me. And I'm here close to God. And I'm saying, God, I'm so low. And God goes, this is the place, Jeff, where you can flourish happily because you are not coming to me as if you're doing me a favor. You're coming to me resting on me. Relying on me. And so that one day, June 7th, 1987, I gave my life to ministry, gave into the call of God. And I realized that in my poor state, in the place of being down, that was the place that God could bring me up because I was super close to him. But what ended up happening is after a few years, God started to work on me. It was like the day I gave into the call, he started opening my mouth. And you know me now, I love crowds. Canada Day is one of my favorite days of the year. Last Sunday afternoon we went downtown. I was so disappointed with the crowds because there was barely any people there. I wanted to go into a sea of people. That was what God changed in me. I would love being around people. And now I'm with people and there are times I'm thinking to myself, Jeff, just shut up. You just keep talking. Some of you have thought that when I've been with you. Just shut up, Pastor. And he started opening my mouth and I started to speak at our youth group, and I started getting invited to retreats. Got some skill. And I stayed decently close to God, but there got to places where I didn't need to pray as much. I didn't need to trust him as much. I didn't need to get into his word as much because I got some skills now, and I'm in ministry. He's called me. Look at the giftings. And I get a little bit further away from God, and then what happens is I'm in ministry, and I begin to see some elements of crisis in ministry. And I don't have the skills and I don't have the goods to get us to the next place. I get desperate and go down again. And as I go down in that place where I don't have enough, I get close to Jesus again. And I go for a season where in my brokenness, in my inability with my own giftings to trust him, and God starts to rise me out of the difficult situations to a new level of leadership. And things are going good, and things are going great, and I start to walk in a new confidence. And now I'm serving in our district office, and I'm starting to preach all over the place. And now I know how to communicate, and I'm out there doing retreats, and I show up at retreats. I haven't prayed for the retreat. I'm going to do it in my own gifting, and I'm in this place. I'm this place I think is so high, but I'm so independent from God. And then God starts creating some moments where the things that I used to do didn't work. And I find myself starting to get to a low place, to a poor place, a broken place. And I start to come back to God. And I find that the places where I feel the most broken and low are the places where I'm the most flourishing with happiness because that's the place where God is. Thanks, Pastor Nick. You see, sometimes you got to clap for being God. That's great. You You see, sometimes our abundant moments can create a God poverty. Sometimes our abundant moments can create a God poverty. Friends, I want to tell you that our successes in Christianity can draw us away from God. It's completely true. Our successes in life. And some of us are completely successful in our jobs and in various elements of our life. But the truth is that we think we're high in the ladder. And God's going, yeah, but you're not really high on my ladder. You would be most flourishing with happiness if you would be in the place that's low and get close to me. In your brokenness at times, in your low places at times, when it's not about you, but it's all about Him, that's when you see the greatest flourishing of your life. That's when the most joy is. Isn't it incredible how we can face crisis and yet we can have joy? Because in the low places, God starts to bring us to the top. I start to think about this scripturally. I thought about Joseph. Here's a slave. Here's a prisoner. He's at the lowest of low, but he has the abundance of God. In his poverty, God's abundance shows up, and God brings him up the ladder. I think about Moses. He's the son of a slave, and in his poverty, God arranges it so that he's brought up the ladder. I think about Gideon, who's from the lowest of low tribes. He's in a wine press hiding. If there's anybody who's poor in spirit, it's Gideon. And what does God do? He says, that's the kind of person I want to use to bring up the ladder, because in his weakness, I'll be made strong. He looks at Elisha. I mean, you want to have a great prophet? Just go to the farmers, Bruce. Farmers are it. Elisha is just a farmer. And God uses him to do great miracles. Then we got David, who's the youngest, and he's the uber deliverer of cheese. He's the one who comes to the brothers on the field, and he's just this young buck, and he delivers the cheese. I mean, he's low. He's at the low part of the ladder. Then we've got John the Baptist. You want to talk about somebody who's poor in spirit? The guy has no money. He's just eating locusts out in the wilderness. I mean, he has no designer clothes. He is a shame when it comes to the fashion world. God uses him. Then we got the Samaritan woman who's got a past. I mean, if there's anybody who's poor in spirit, it's her. But she's the one who leads the village to Christ. And then we got Peter, who's hot-tempered, impetuous. I mean, he's the one, he's just a fisherman. The low, poor in spirit. Listen. It's our lack that brings about God's abundance. It's our lack that brings about God's... Now, that doesn't mean that you need to go and pursue a path of poverty. That doesn't mean that you need to quit your great job and take on some lower level job. That doesn't mean that you've got to just give up everything that you have. But friends, in our low places, when there is a lack of self, when we approach God as if we have nothing, that we are in a poverty place, that we could never do it without God. God steps in an incredible way, and he says, blessed are you in those places, for you're the people I'm choosing for the kingdom, because in your lack, I will be abundant. But in your abundance, there will often be a God poverty. In our abundance, there will often be a God poverty. The way to go up is to be down. To abase ourselves before God. Secondly, not only is the way up the way down, not only is being down the way to be up, but secondly, joy comes in the morning. In mourning. It says, blessed are those who grieve, for they will be comforted. Now this is a weird one. I've done a number of funerals lately, and I haven't said to the family, hey, you guys are so lucky because you're grieving. I mean, that would be heartless of me. But that's basically what Jesus says. He says, hey, you guys will flourish in happiness in the midst of your grieving. And what he is pointing to is a passage in Isaiah, and we're going to look at it right now. Isaiah chapter 61, verses 1 to 4. Says, the Spirit of the Lord is on me. Just let me pause here for a second. We recognize this passage from Luke chapter 4. This is Jesus' mission statement. Jesus takes the scrolls in the temple and says, let me start to read. And he begins to read this very first passage. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor, which we've just dealt with. And then he says, and he has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives, and release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, Then he says, to comfort all who mourn. Next verse. And provide for those who grieve in Zion, to bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of joy instead of mourning, a garment of praise instead of the spirit of despair. Oh, friends, isn't that good stuff? That he's gonna give a crown of beauty instead of ashes, that he's gonna give oil of joy instead of mourning, that he's gonna give a garment of praise instead of this spirit of despair. This great exchange is about to take place. They will be called oaks of righteousness, a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendor. And the last passage says, they will rebuild the ancient ruins and restore the places long devastated. They will renew the ruined cities and they have been devastated for that have been devastated for generations. And I included that fourth verse because it gives the context of the passage. Jesus is speaking to, he is referring to a moment that the Israelites understood very clearly when they were in exile, when Jerusalem was destroyed. Where they would mourn for a death, and this word mourn means to grieve over something that has died. For them, it wasn't a physical death. It was the death of their city. It was the death of their fame. It was the death of what once was God's favor on their life. It was the death that was in their world because of their sin. And he's speaking back to a moment when the children of Israel are in exile. And he says that you will be in this place where you'll be mourning. And he says you will be grieving over what has just happened. And now he's standing in front of a crowd going, some of you understand this because your forefathers told you about it. And now you're under the oppression of Rome. And you're feeling the same thing going, hey, we were once a great nation. Hey, we once were people of power. Hey, we once had a reputation through the world. Hey, we once were in charge. We had our own city. We feel like the people who were in exile. And we are mourning over the death of what has come about from us, this mourning, this grieving. I want to tell you something. You'd go, what's so good about that? When we are in mourning, God gets our attention. Honestly, when we're in mourning, God, when something's dead, how often do you go to your knees? How often do you find yourself when something has died? For individuals in this place who have faced the loss of a loved one lately, the moment your loved one passed away, you were driven to prayer because you needed the comfort of God. When a dream dies and you don't know what to do, you were completely confident in that dream, what do? You go to your knees and you look for the comfort of God. When a relationship dies and you're heartbroken and you don't know what to do, you go to your knees and you look for the comfort of God. It's in our painful moments that God provides his comfort. It's in those painful moments that God provides his comfort. You see, pain can make a positive difference in our lives. In our pain, we will either moan or mourn. Moan or mourn. You know what I'm talking about, right? Moaning or mourners. There are those who moan. When I was a teenager, we were going to a church in Oshawa, Trinity Pentecostal. We had arrived there when I was a young boy. The church was a strong church in our city. It had a great reputation, doing great things for God. We arrived, and a couple years in, there was a church split. Really shook my world as a kid. Couldn't understand how Christians could do that. I grew up into my junior high years watching this church limp along, and it seemed like as we were going into my teen years that the church seemed to be getting more and more unhealthy. And I watched as the church members would exit the congregation. New families weren't coming, old families were leaving, new families weren't even considering our church. And in the midst of this, I would hear moaning, oh, the pastor doesn't know how to preach. There's no vision here. And word after word that was just moaning, complaining, criticizing, backbiting, just constantly moaning. And here I was as a teenager, and in the midst of this, God seemed to be doing something in my life. And as I would stand in my pew, three rows from the front on the left side of the church, right side where you're seated, doesn't even matter. As I'd sit there and stand there and I'd look around the pews, I would see emptiness. Especially on our Sunday nights. Barely anybody would show up. And I remember what the church looked like when I had first come. And something inside grieved the situation. And instead of complaining and criticizing, my heart was broken because I knew this was a church that had once been a strong church, but now it was emptying and it was dying. And in those moments of grieving, I found myself going to prayer. I would walk to church each Sunday night before the service started, make sure I was there at 6 o'clock, and I'd go into the prayer room and I'd pray. And in my morning, God, this place is dying. God, this place feels dead. And I would feel the presence of God come in because I wasn't moaning, I wasn't complaining, I wasn't criticizing, I wasn't jumping ship, but my heart was grieving about the death that was there. And in those moments, the presence of God came around Jeff Hillier. He taught me a lesson that in our mourning, not our moaning, in our mourning, God will faithfully surround us with his peace. God will faithfully surround us with his peace. I want to tell you something. We all go through bad moments. And some of you have been in a bad moment and you go, why isn't God showing up and giving me the peace? Because you're moaning. And I want to just be honest, nobody likes to hang out with a moaner, not even God. He doesn't. Oh, every time I come near that person, they just complain, complain, complain. I feel so depleted by the time that thing's over. God's not looking for people who moan. He's looking for people who mourn. People who sense the brokenness and call it on him. You see, there are two things. You can go to this next slide. There are these four A's I read about this week. The wrong response to the difficulties of life when we are grieving. Something's died. And this is what we see in the Israelites all through the Old Testament and in parts of the New Testament. We see that in our moanings, we will start to adapt to ungodly things. We'll make some adaptions. God says do this, but we'll adapt because we are so disappointed with what has happened. We start to adapt. Some of us will start to accommodate some of those things, some of those people who have other ways of doing things. We'll accommodate so that we can maybe get over the hump of the difficulty. Some of us will join activism and we'll start to rise up and we'll complain and we'll speak for justice and we'll be a loud voice. And then there are those who will just walk away from God, the apostasy. This is what we see. These four A's, this is what we see when people are moaning. Adjustments in their values, adjustments in their morals, adjustments in the way they live their lives. Everything but running to God. Just taking things on themselves. And then we see the right response, which is faithful mourning. Faithful mourning. It's that moment where we're in the death experience. And we draw near to God. And we don't complain about things, but we say, God, I feel like something's died. And I run to him, and in my mourning, in my true mourning, not my moaning, but in my mourning, I run to God, I get down on my knees, I say, God, the dream has died. The relationship's died. The plans have died. God, something's died. I just need you. And in those moments, God says, you're in the exact place I want you to be. And he sends in his spirit. He sends in his presence. He promises that those who are in the mourning moments will receive the comfort of God. In our mourning, we have the opportunity to have flourishing happiness, not because of our circumstances, but because of the one who's in control of our circumstances, because of God. Yeah, I remember so clearly. I'm not going to walk through the details because I've shared it before, but the first time I was rejected by a church to be the lead pastor. They didn't want me, and you've heard me tell this, and they rejected me. They said, no, we're going to go a different direction. I was so angry. I sent them a rejection letter to their rejection. It's true. True story. I got up early one morning, wrote them a letter, rejected their rejection. I can't believe I did that. How audacious and arrogant of me. Anyways, I did it. And so I wrote this letter and said, hey, you know, think again. And then I said, what? Give me half an hour. Let me share my heart. Let me share my vision. I mean, I was so angry. Created a little ruffle in the board, I heard. A group of them wanted to give me the chance. The two individuals didn't, and I won't give you all the details, but Then they rejected my rejection letter of the rejection. I spent a season of moaning. God, this is crazy. Do they not know? I'm going to be as transparent as possible. Do they not know? I work for district office. I've been in this for a while. I'm a significant leader. This is the stuff I'm saying to God. So arrogant. God, I've preached all over North America. I sit at some of the highest tables. I have a pretty good mind for leadership. I understand what's happening in the church world and what needs to be navigated forward. Do they understand what they're giving up? I moaned, complained, and it brought me nowhere. And then one day, the moaning stopped. And I came to God and said, God, I just need to tell you I'm broken inside. Because I actually had a dream for what this could have looked like. And I don't understand why you ever asked me to put my name in if you didn't want me to go there, if you knew this was going to happen. God, I need you. And in that moment, the Spirit of God invaded my life when I was not moaning but mourning. And in that moment, God began to speak to me. Jeff, I called you. I got plans for you. I know your future. My hand is upon you. I'm going to use you. And he began to speak life over me in the midst of not my moaning, but my mourning, in the midst of my grieving over the dream that had died. In that moment, the Spirit of God flooded in, and I found myself flourishing in happiness. And I walked back into our office, not as a defeated, rejected individual, but I walked in with confidence because God had taken my mourning and he gave me joy. He gave me joy. You see, if you moan, you'll never have the joy. But in your mourning, where you drive into the presence of God, that's where he gives you joy for your grieving. That's where he takes your garments of heaviness and gives you garments of praise. And in the midst of the most difficult death situations, God will come in and cause you to experience a joy that you've never seen before. Flourishing in happiness because not of the circumstances, but because of his presence. Joy comes in the morning. Last thing we learn in this passage is that advancement comes without assertiveness. Jesus says, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. The crowd's standing there. They've seen his miracles. They're pretty convinced that this could be the Messiah, and they've been waiting for this. But they have a history of what could take place, what might take place. You see, they're under Roman rule, and there's a group within the land called the Zealots. And these zealots are the type of individuals who want to advance Israel's cause. They want to create a revolt. They want to create chaos. And wherever they go, they say, hey, we're the type of people who need to assert ourselves. We're the people of God. We need to do something to show who we are. Let's stand up. And they would create these rebel moments and stir the crowd, even into violence, trying to assert so they could get the advancement of their kingdom. The advancement of what belonged to them, and they asserted themselves. Have you ever met somebody who just tries to assert themselves for the advancement? Anybody work with somebody who's tried to assert themselves for advancement? Anybody? Watch this video clip for a quick second.
I could save the branch.
Really?
If you let me run it.
Okay.
Okay, I can run it.
What would you do differently?
Mostly get rid of waste, which is half the people there, and clean house. Right here. It's all for me. Thank you.
Dwight, you must feel strongly to speak with me this way behind Michael's back and turn on so many of your coworkers.
The decision to turn on Michael was difficult, but once I did it, I didn't look back. And mostly I feel that Michael would approve. It's really what's best for the branch. And I could care less about my coworkers. So, here we are. It's all on the table. I want the branch. And I await your decision.
This character, Dwight, he's not impressed with his boss, and so he figures he'll go above his head to his superior and assert himself so he can advance his role within the company and push his head. I want it, I want it, I want it. That's what was happening in the land. Dwight was in the land. Dwight the Zealot was in the land trying to advance things. And there are moments in our lives where we're thinking, if I don't stand, if I don't become assertive, if I don't push for things, I'm not going to get what I deserve. I'm not going to advance this thing. And Jesus goes, you know what? I want to tell you that it's not the assertive who will see advancement. It's the meek. The meek. And we sometimes think that meek means weakness. But meek means God's power under God's control. God's power under God. God's not saying that you need to be a weak individual. He's saying that you need to operate under God's power, under God's control. He's looking for meek people, and he says, listen, you want to know how things advance? Would you walk in meekness and see what happens? We see the story in the Bible. Moses. Moses has grown up under Pharaoh's courts. One day he's kind of doing a little walk, just seeing how things are going, how the pyramids are going. Walks by and he sees this slave, this slave owner, who starts to whip one of the Israelites. He's upset because he knows this is his people. And so he comes over and he kills the slave driver. He asserts himself. This is not the way things should be. I have this righteous anger inside me. And he asserts himself and he kills this individual. Next day he's walking through, another argument breaks out, and he's thinking, maybe I should step in again. And he gets called out. What are you going to do? You're going to kill me too? What? I thought nobody knew. I thought that was just a private thing. I didn't know people were talking about this. And in the midst of trying to assert himself, he actually causes himself more trouble. Rather than advancing God's cause, he actually creates more chaos for the people of Israel. And so he flees and finds himself in the wilderness for a number of years. And then one day he sees this bush that's burning. The Bible tells us that he goes up and has this conversation with the bush, and it's God manifesting himself. And God says, I've called you. I've called you for my cause, to advance my cause. And what does Moses do? He's like, it's about time, God. Don't you know I've been raised in Pharaoh's courts? Don't you know that I know how to kill people? It's about time you chose me. Look at me. I've been waiting for you. I've been waiting for you to choose me. God, I don't really want to do this. I don't really. Could you choose somebody else? I got a few excuses, a couple reasons. You know, I'm really busy. I'm not really a great communicator. I'm getting kind of old. I'm not sure Pharaoh's going to listen to a shepherd. They might kill me. Yeah, this is a bad plan, God. Choose somebody else. God goes, oh, you sound pretty meek there, Moses. Yeah, that's another reason. Choose somebody else. And God goes, it's the meek that we're going to inherit the land. It's you, Moses. And God takes this meek individual, not an assertive one, a meek individual, who walks in God's power. Please listen, it's not about weakness. It's walking in God's power. Walks in God's power, under God's control, stands before Pharaoh, has the 10 plagues situation, and leads the Israelites out of slavery into their inheritance. Leads them to the place where Joshua can take over, and to the place they'll go into their inheritance. He advances them out of slavery into the path towards the promised land. And you know what's so interesting? Is that the Bible tells us in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 3, that Moses was the most meek man on the face of the earth. This one-time man who was super assertive, who always stood up and just shouted out in his own strength, trying to do things in his own strength, has now come to a place where he's meek. And it's in his meekness that God uses him to advance the kingdom, to advance the kingdom. You see, friends, you want to advance the things around you? Don't assert yourself. You'd say, well, I'm not a very strong personality. I'm kind of quiet. I'm kind of behind the scenes person. God goes, that's okay. It's not about you anyways. It's about my strength in you. Maybe you're a little bit more like me. You're a little bit loud at times. You're a talker. You say what everybody wants to say, but no one has the guts to say. That's my problem. I constantly go into meetings going, I'm not going to say anything until lunchtime. And then 5 minutes into the thing, blah, 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 blah. And just start speaking. She's sharing my mind. And God says, you want to advance? You want to advance things? Don't do it of your own strength. Put your assertiveness aside and walk in God's power under his control. You think that meekness is a bad place, it's a low place, it's actually the place where you will flourish in happiness because you'll see the advancement of God's kingdom. Pastor Steve, would you come back? Jesus says, blessed are, gives these three low places. He says to us that down is the path upward. He says to us, joy comes in the morning. And lastly, he says that advancement comes without assertiveness in our meekness. Most of you know that I play softball with a few guys in our church. Pastor Steve's one of them. We've had this great record outside of our first night. We've won every single game. But 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, we were playing this one team. And the first game, we mercied them. If you don't know what mercy is, it means that if you are ahead by 13 runs or more in the fifth inning, that the game is done. And so we mercied them the first game. I mean, we were killing them. We looked good. We got to the second game, because it's always a doubleheader. And we walked into the second game with this arrogance and cockiness. We are the superior team. And so I watched something that I've not seen, and I've been playing since 2012. I watched something take place on the field that I hadn't seen yet. I watched all our infielders go to the outfield, and all our outfielders go to the infield. We completely switched it up. The team gets up the bat, and they score 7 runs in 1 inning. In 1 inning. I got to tell you something. I came in one inning. I was so angry. I said, hey, guys, do you know this team has scored, I think it was 43 runs. They had been playing for 8 or 9 weeks. They had played like 18 games. They scored 43 runs the entire season so far. And in this inning alone, they've scored, or in this game alone, they've scored 13. They had actually scored 20 at that point. They had scored half the runs they'd scored all season on us because we got so cocky. And so everybody's frustrated, everybody's angry, so we switched back to what needed to take place. We put all our infield back to where they were, all our outfielders where they were. Now we're down by a few runs, it's bottom of the 7th. Someone had hit a home run, and I think we had 1 out. I got up to bat, I was quite concerned, I didn't want to mess it up for us, and I was able to get a single, got into first base. Then someone else got up, and they drove in another single, so it allowed me to go to third base. And now we had another player who gets up, and he strikes out. Now we got 2 out. And we're so nervous, but we are focused. We are focused, and Pastor Steve gets up. This is about you. Pastor Steve gets up. The pressure's on him, but we're focused. We're no longer acting like we're cocky or all that. We're actually at the place where we're behind this team that we've just mercy. And he hits a beautiful hit just over the infield, lands on the grass, allowing me to come in from third to score the winning run. He gets the credit because he hit the ball, but I ran it over the line. In our high place, we were messing everything up because we figured that we were all that. But when we got to the place of brokenness, where we were behind, we started to get to the place where we needed to be to get focused again. And there are some of you who are facing some things and you feel like you're in a low place, poor in spirit, grieving over the death of something. You feel so meek. And God goes, you know what? You're actually in the place I want you to be. Because in your low place, I will be made high. In your low place, if you will run to me, I will be made high, and I will allow you to flourish and come out of this with such happiness, with such joy, with such comfort, with such advancement, with such rising to a place of significance, if you allow me to get all the credit, not you. In our low places, we're in the blessed places, in the places we can flourish. I want to ask this question this morning because Pastor Steve is going to lead us in a song as we conclude this service. You've come in this place and you feel like you're in a low place. Maybe it's about who you are. Maybe you don't have very much money. You don't have very much status. You would be poor in spirit and you'd say, Pastor, I just feel like I have a lack of. Or maybe you're here today and say, there's a dream, there's something that's died. I'm grieving. Or maybe you'd say, you know what? I'm not super confident. I feel kind of meek. You'd say, Pastor, I feel like I'm in a low place. If that's you, would you just raise your hand? Just quickly, all across this place, raise your hand. Say, I feel like I'm in a low place. Come on, there's more. I know that there's more. Yeah. There's something about your circumstance right now. I feel like I'm in a low place. It's good. It's good. I'm here today to tell those who just raised your hands that the kingdom of God is about those who are poor, because in our lack, He is abundant. I'm here today to tell you that those who mourn, not moan, those who mourn and run to the presence of God will see His comfort come. I'm here today to tell you that those who will walk in meekness, in God's strength, will see advancement. In your low place, you are blessed. In your low place, you will flourish. In your low place, you will find happiness, not in circumstances, but in God Himself. In God. I want to speak this over you with your heads bowed, your eyes closed. In your low places, God's going to show up. I'm telling you this, I speak this over you as a congregation today, that you may hear the enemy lying, saying that you will not flourish in this low place, that you will not have any more happiness, that you will need to walk around with your head down. But I'm here to tell you, that's not what Jesus said. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed. God wants to speak life and flourishing over you. You will flourish in the happiness of God. Blessed are those who grieve, for they shall receive comfort. Blessed are the meek, for the land shall be theirs. God's promising that in your low places you are blessed. And so, Father, as we conclude this service, I thank you so much, God. I thank you so much for what you are speaking through your word. I thank you, dear God, that you are the one who helps us to flourish in the low places. So today, would you speak life to those who feel low, for those who feel poor. I pray that you would be their abundance. For those who have a lack, they would sense your abundant presence. For those who are grieving because of the death of someone or something, that they would know that you will come in and bring them comfort. And for those who need to advance, that it would not be their assertiveness, but the strength of God in them. It may not appear like a high characteristic, but it is the characteristic that advances the kingdom and advances the causes that God has for our lives. In our lowness, may we know that we will flourish in the happiness of God. And I pray this week that your hand will be on this congregation. They would sense your presence. They would run to you whenever there's a trial. And they would know that you are with them today. So bless each one, I pray, in Jesus' name. Amen.